Greetings from K9 to Diddly-Dum, Diddly-Dum, Diddly-Dum. End of message.
Day, faithless listeners, and welcome to episode 144 of the Diddly Dum podcast, the fourth best Doctor Who podcast out there. I'm Doc.
I'm Hayden.
And I'm Mark.
And it's a rare podcast for us because thanks to the lockdown, instead of being in the comfort of our recording studio in the Whoseum with all our state-of-the-art equipment, the three of us are at our respective family homes at different ends of the country.
Oh, I'm in Paradise Towers.
Mark is in the Lorry Park. I'm sorry, the Garden of England in Kent. Yes. Hayden is... are you in Cambridgeshire, Hayden, or Suffolk?
Literally depends on which side of the bed I fall out of.
Well, I don't really know much about Suffolk.
I'm Suffolk, yeah.
Are you that far driving distance from towns like Ditton and Harston?
Do you know what? I've never even heard of them. But Cambridge is quite literally on my doorstep, so...
Literally.
Okay. Mark is in the Garden of England in Kent. Hayden is locked away near Ditton and Harston, of which Rupert Brooke once wrote, "Ditton girls are mean and dirty, and there's none in Harston under 30. Stands the Hoosium clock at 10 to 3, and is there Dandelion and Burdock still for tea? And I myself, well, for the last 4 weeks I've been in my mother's house up here, in the County Palatine, on the outskirts of Manchester. Thank goodness for fibre broadband and the ability to work from home. And in fact, I'm currently sat in the box room of my mother's house, which for about 10 years from the age of 5 until my sister left home was my boyhood bedroom.
Aww.
Was long ago converted into an office. In fact, if I look up at the ceiling, it's still covered in the polystyrene tiles my dad put up in 1972. Which I used to lie in bed imagining it was a sort of bleak seven starscape.
Hmm.
Lots of planets very close together. Pictures in the show notes, of course, which can, as ever, be found on our blog at diddlydumpodcast.wordpress.com.
We're luckily in this day and age that we could actually look into each other's houses as well through the medium of Skype, Zoom and what have you. And I must admit, Doc, I was a little concerned when I saw just how many teenage posters of Richard Franklin you had up around the place.
Well, we're recording this on the 15th of January, which those of you who know us best will know is the podcast's 7th birthday. Ooh, to the day.
Bloody hell.
Didn't we do
that?
Who
would have thought it would last this long? Wow. Certainly not me. And although we're not there, we do have a video link to an empty Hoosium, where even now we can see being wheeled out of the kitchen by our crack team of catering robots. It's a giant cake. And, oh my God, who's that bursting out of the top of the cake?
It's John Nathan Turner.
It's friend of the show, Mark Cockrum, the human palindrome.
Oh, that's much different. Let me just get my glasses.
From the Nerdology UK and, oh, what's it called? And All of Time and Space podcasts. And Mark is waving to... Hang on, did we turn off the life support when we left to save up on electricity? Oh, dear, I don't think there's any oxygen there.
Oh, dear.
Mark looks a bit,
Ah. Mark, can you hear us? Break a window.
No! Those are priceless!
Oh.
Well, I think... Oh, hang on. What's this? Oh, it's the... Pridonian seal is just pushing his snout through the cat flap. That'll let a bit of air in. I think Mark should be okay. Okie doke. Well, what's been happening since last we spoke? We've been a little disappointed this January because our Twitter followers total, which has recently passed 3,000, thank you, faithless listeners, and we've been really on a high that it keeps going up and up. But a few days after the storming of the US Capitol, inexplicably, our Twitter followers total dropped by one.
No?
Have we lost the real Philip Morris or something? I'm not sure what's going on. How did our Christmases go? Did anyone get anything Doctor Who-ish for Christmas? What did you end up doing?
I did a jigsaw.
Ooh.
I dug a 1,000-piece jigsaw that I got. It must have been Christmas 2007, I reckon, out of the games cupboard, and haven't done it in years. Mm. And this jigsaw is a not my doctor's nightmare, because according to this jigsaw, Peter Cushing's canonical.
Oh.
Does it include Capaldi, or is it only go as far as Matt Smith?
It goes up to Tennant and Billy Piper.
Oh.
Are on there. So, yeah, so it must be 2006, I reckon. I probably got it a year later.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people probably like their Doctor Who like that.
You get any prezzies, Doctor Who related?
I got the Doctor Who annual for this year, which means that for another year, I have got the complete set of Doctor Who annuals.
Is that any good?
It's actually, do you know what? It's not bad. It's quite nice. It's a nice recap over the last series. They just don't seem as full as they used to be. Do you know what I mean? The stories aren't as fulfilling anymore. And then again, it is practically a children's annual, so I'll keep it aside for my son when he's bullied into liking Doctor Who. So,
any nicotine-related puzzles?
Nicotine?
Nicotine.
In the annual.
Nicotine. You don't think of that one that's spelled with a Q that helps people get over...
Hang on.
The anti-Dalek force are trying to give up smoking.
Yeah, you have to count the fag ends or something.
Have you ever tried vaping, Mark?
Yes, yes, I did for a number of years.
When you buy a refill, what's they called? It's called refills.
Oh, it's called vape liquid. You buy a little bottle of vape liquid.
Every time you throw away 5 bottles of vape liquid, there's enough left in the bottom to fill a new... Well, I get told every year in the go to Christmas, can you email us some ideas? And all I gave my family this year were requests for Eagle Moss figures, and I got 7. And they're on my mum's sideboard downstairs at the moment. What did I get? I got the Jamie and the Second Doctor set.
Oh, Mead.
Oh.
Mead?
Carry on, I'm just going to say need or got.
Oh, right. I got Omega.
Got.
You have them or you received them this year?
No, I have already.
Oh, right.
I only have about 7 myself.
I got Barusa and Romana in the long white fur robe.
need.
Sticking the key to time tracer out. And I got the Golden Emperor drone Dalek set, which admittedly...
Ooh.
I think is meant for me for the Time Lord Victorious range, but I couldn't pass it up. The Golden Emperor, admittedly, is... I don't think the head is big enough.
No. Why have you tried it?
Unless they've specially all been made to the right scale. And what the Golden Emperor could do with his various... eye stalks and sticks at the level of Jamie's skirt is no one's business. Well, do you get any oh, what are those things called, Mark? What's that that's like sort of a B&Q place where you can go?
Oh, B&M. B&M. Yeah, it's not B&Q place. Only in the fact that it's got B and in its name.
That's close enough for me. Do you get any of those?
Yeah, I did actually. I'd forgotten that I'd requested these. I requested them when they came out because, as you know, a lot of these B&M sets, which are limited production, they tend to disappear very quickly. Lots of scalpers go out and buy loads of them. So when they came out back in the summer, I did say to my sister, oh, there's some new figures coming out for Doctor Who. If you're going to B&M, can you pick up a couple and I'll have them for Christmas, please? And I asked for the Companions of the Fourth Doctor set. And the Unit 1971 Claws of Axos set.
Oh.
Which actually I should have had for my birthday because that's the year I was born. And I think it was quite close to Claws of Axos. Yeah, the Companions of the Fourth Doctor set has Sarah Jane in her sort of military fatigues.
Yes. That would be Genesis, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
She's got a massive sunflower on her head for the Genesis one. No one's going to get that, are they?
No.
I interrupted your
Peter Gabriel
joke. I'm sorry.
It took us a while, we got there.
Who else do you have?
Yeah, let's crack on. The Romana one in her Pirate Planet pink jacket.
You wanted that, didn't you?
Yes, well, not as much as I'd like Romana one in her Armageddon Factor outfit, but, yep. You know, never mind.
Yep.
So you got Sarah, Romana.
And I got Romana 2 in her Destiny of the Daleks female Tom Baker outfit. So that's lovely. And then the unit box has the Brigadier, it has Benton, and it has Mike Yates from the best trilogy ever in Doctor Who. There he is. Yeah, they're still in the boxes. I haven't got them out and played with them yet because obviously I'm not planning on staying in this part of Kent at Paradise Towers.
Are you one of those people who doesn't open them?
No. I believe they should be got out and played with and assembled on shelves and things like that. I do keep the boxes, which is a bit of a pain in the arse, but I do keep them.
For instance, have you opened your second Galen yet?
No. He's never been opened. As long as I can resist the first Galen, my replacement Galen, dying in some sort of laser defence system. If I get bored during lockdown.
With the second Galen, are his accessories a recorder and baggy check trousers?
What?
You said the second Galen.
Oh,
flip
I see.
It, right, that is it. I'm going to pack up and go.
But anyway, Mark, your unit set. Is it a demons one where Mike and Benton are in?
No, that would be the ultimate, wouldn't it? Unfortunately, no, it's not. They're all in. It's the Claws of Axos, and they're all in their smart uniforms.
So no bright red jeans.
Sadly, not.
I got them a few months ago. Those figures, and oddly enough, when I bought the Fourth Doctor companions on eBay. The person who I bought them from had clearly got them out of the box and muddled them up because I ended up getting the second Romana in her Horns of Nymon outfit.
What, with the same first Romana and Sarah Jane? Oh, that is odd. I do like that Horns of Nymon.
Of course you do, Mark. Of course you do.
Yeah, of course.
Of course you do. I got Ace from the Remembrance of the Daleks set with her rocket launcher. And her backpack.
Oh, that's very cool.
So I'm very happy with that. I think I've only got a few figures of the companions left to go now before I've got the whole lot. I think it's Leela, Joe, Graham, and Yaz, I think, are the only ones I'm missing.
Who?
Yeah.
Sorry.
And did we get anything else non-Doctor Who related that was nice?
I got the Complete Goodies DVD box set.
No, really?
Yeah.
Oh, you jammy though, but you love that.
So that's nice, yeah. Very happy with that. So I shall be, when I get round to starting watching it, I shall watch it and I shall be listening to the Goodies Pirate Podcast. Is it called Pirate Podcast?
Yes.
Yes, I think it says that's that one that Dave Kitchen does.
Yep, that's the
with,
one.
With one of his colleagues.
Yep.
Well, talking of Remembrance... This may seem a rather obscure link, but on Channel 4 on the 22nd, which will be, probably next weekend, won't it? We'll be getting that premiere of RTD's new 80s TV drama, It's a Sin, won't we?
Oh, yeah.
Produced by Phil Collinson, which I didn't realise. Directed by Peter Hoare, who I think directed A Good Man Goes to War, didn't he?
Yes, he did, yes. Yeah.
So I was waiting for when you said Phil Collinson. I was waiting for Hayden to make another Genesis joke.
Zing.
Now, you probably heard that they filmed a scene specially with Daleks for this drama, because it involves, at one point, character Richie, played by someone called Ollie Alexander, who seems to be raising a great deal of delight among youngsters, but I must admit, in 2004, when everyone's reaction to the casting of Billy Piper was, oh my God, mine was, Billy who? Somebody shows my age.
Even in 2004?
Anyway, this character apparently gets cast, must be an actor, gets cast on Doctor Who, and I think they're combining a little of Remembrance with a little of Resurrection. And they're going to be called, it's this fictional Doctor Who episode, story called Regression of the Daleks.
Oh, God, they're not, are they?
Anyway.
They're not. They're going to take out the Daleks with unlimited rice pudding.
I think it's only going to be a quick snatch, if you'll excuse the expression.
Don't you think the R thing of the Daleks has been overdone and taking little bits from other old Dalek stories is a bit old hat? So we move on to the next story that we're reviewing.
Anyway, my point about Remembrance was that he gets cast in the role of someone called Lyndon. I did the latest DWM. It was an interview with Russell T. Davies where he says this is by way of a sort of memorial for Dursley McLyndon, who you may remember played Ace Love Interest / UKIP member Mike Smith in Remembrance.
Yeah.
Who I hadn't realised died of an AIDS-related illness back in 95. And apparently RTD knew him.
God.
What did he say? Got it somewhere. He became very wonderful in his AIDS activism when he was ill, remembers Russell. But to me, he was that boy from Remembrance of the Daleks. That's why I knew I had to write a Dalek scene in It's a Sin. I didn't do it as a joke. It's not me going, hooray, let's get a few pages in DWM. It felt natural. I was really desperate to do it. It's a little smile towards Dursley, who I loved. I did it for Dursley. So that's quite nice, that.
Yes.
Something we haven't mentioned. Will Jodie stay?
Don't know, because three seasons does generally tend to be sort of a comfortable sort of length of time for most doctors, especially with the big gaps in between the seasons.
Yeah, that's what makes me think this time around this might be her last one. But the only thing I do think is the last Doctor Who left 2 years before an anniversary special never came back for it. And I just wonder if Jodie won't be giving herself enough time to get over the role.
Mm.
I know that in New Who, showrunners have always changed at the same time as doctors, because showrunners seem to think, I can't write someone else's doctor, I must have him of my own. But it might have been interesting for Jodie to see how someone else would write her.
Mm,
yeah. I mean, in a way, you've had loads of people writing it, because it's not just been Chris Chibnall who's written all of it. But he's presumably driven the way things go in the writer's room. Just, I think it would be nice to see. I think the big thing about her leaving is, would the BBC have the balls to cast anyone as a replacement other than Joe Martin? Is it Joe Martin?
Yes.
Because everyone's going to say, oh, it must be Joe. I didn't think... We've seen so little of her doing anything, either in... What was it? Something of the Jadoon? What was it called?
Fugitive.
Fugitive of the Jadoon or The Act of Timeless Children.
Mm.
I don't know what people have been basing the adoration of what a marvellous replacement should be. I have nothing to be against her.
Oh, I thought she's really good in the story she's in. But I'm not sure how that would fit with... I don't know. I know the Doctor can have the same face as someone they've met, but it seems odd if that person was an earlier version of themselves.
Mm.
I'll be excited to find out. And I think that's something to look forward to.
But, yes, Mark, as you were... about to cue us on New Year's Day. Did we all watch Resolution of the Daleks? Hang on.
No.
on New Year's Day, did we all watch Revolution of the Daleks?
Yes.
Overnights of 4.6 million, later updated with consolidated figures of 6.35 million. Shouldn't sound too bad. That's compared to the last New Year's special Resolution, which was 5.15 million consolidated to 7.13. Audience Appreciation Index score of 79. So I was quite excited when we suggested we were going to do this podcast review, and Mark said, oh, yes, I've got a lot I want to say. So for the last few weeks, I've been thinking, oh, is he going to rave or is he going to rage?
Oh, me?
A question we always ask of Mark. Who wants to kick us off?
I think Marco should.
Okay, well, I find this a mixed bag, really. I really enjoyed it. I quite enjoyed it. I mean, I always enjoy watching Doctor Who first time around, usually. Even the episodes I absolutely pick holes in. There aren't many episodes that I don't get some pleasure from, to be honest.
Armageddon Factor being one of them.
No, I like quite a lot of Armageddon Factor. Oh, sorry, you mean that there's something I get pleasure from in the Armageddon Factor?
Yes!
Right, yeah.
Dear.
Fair point. Should I start off with what I really liked about it?
Yeah.
I have to say, I think some of the best things in it were Bradley Walsh, who I thought was pretty great throughout. His interactions with Ryan, as usual, were fantastic. The bit where Jack comes in and calls Graham Silver Fox.
Oh, yeah.
Bradley Walsh's expression and the way he plays it is just like comic perfection.
Yeah.
And I also thought that he was really good in that goodbye scene at the end. I thought he's absolutely perfect.
What, in the TARDIS or on the hillside?
The TARDIS, definitely. Yeah, the goodbye scene with the Doctor. The Daleks are great as well. I love the drone Daleks. I think they look pretty cool. I think they look much better in their black and blue or red livery. And the Dalek spaceship, brilliant as well. Probably quite a small set, really, but I think for the BBC budget, they've done wonders.
I love the interior design of that spaceship.
Yeah, exactly. I imagine that there's not a lot of it, but they made it look... It worked, yeah. Didn't it?
I don't think I've ever noticed this before, but it occurred to me that I think they look much better to me gliding around their own spaceships or their own metal cities, Daleks, than they do in a suburban road on Earth or on a bridge somewhere. They just look far more menacing gliding around, you know, these little corners while someone's hiding behind one of the doors.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. The way Jack was sort of like hiding in that alcove was very much like old classic Doctor Who, wasn't it? Where they've got no peripheral vision whatsoever and they just sort of go gliding past. It was quite lovely. I enjoyed that. I mean, the Daleks overall were just fantastic. They look great. It's just, I wish there'd been more Dalek on Dalek action. because there's just that little scene with them on the bridge, isn't there, really?
Yes.
I know it's the budget again, but it's just, you know, it seemed to be building to this great big battle of Daleks. And then, I mean, it kind of finished off screen as well, didn't it? Just suddenly Jack says, oh, they killed the last of the drone Daleks. And then that's like it. And all you've seen is those Daleks shoot at each other on the bridge.
Given that you imagine that they must have spread these security drones out all across the UK, you think, well, the SAS Daleks would have to spread out all over the UK.
Yes,
and yet when the Doctor wants it, it's a bit like at the end of the Battle of Canary Wharf, the Doctor wants to get them all together. It takes only about 30 seconds to shoot back into the centre of London.
Yeah, but I mean, Doctor Who's always been like that, hasn't it? There's always been these great big global invasions and we only ever see London. Yeah. But you do expect perhaps a little more in this day and age.
Yes.
Yeah. But the Daleks spinning around the TARDIS and stuff and in midair, that was a pretty awesome scene as well. In fact, my friend Ed, who I think I've mentioned a couple of times before, I've watched the odd episode with him before for doing reviews, and he messaged me whilst this was on, actually.
Is this Ed of the faulty headphones, Jack?
No, this isn't. This is another friend of mine. No. I will be mentioning him later on, though.
All right. Rub it in that you have other friends.
Yeah, I got a WhatsApp message, and it just said, "My God, it's a Dalek feast." to which I replied, "Not enough Dalek on Dalek action, though." And he replied, "Maybe, but it was still awesome. Those death waves were great, and flying Daleks too."
No.
It's like, so as somebody who hasn't watched hardly any of the new series, if any at all, he just really enjoyed it. So, but just for me, just more Dalek and less stopping the action for 4 or 5 minutes while a couple of characters talk.
I could do with trying this one of those Dalek feasts. So I bet it could be a lot better than the Dalek Death Ray Ice Lolly that I remember.
the other bit I liked was the. Although it doesn't really make much sense, is the prison exercise yard.
Oh, yeah.
With all the things cordoned off. That was fun, getting to see some of the old costumes being used again. And seeing all the, you know, getting glimpses of these other creatures in the periphery of the screen. Although it doesn't really make sense why they'd have to leave their,
oh, their
prison
cells
to go and stand in...
somewhere that's not... no big, actually, yeah, quite smaller than the cells, yeah.
Yeah, it's really served only to pepper the screen with callbacks and old foes, really, didn't it? Old monsters. But it was just not a bad thing.
It could hardly be that it was good to be in the open air for them, could it? Because they're an asteroid somewhere.
Well, no, exactly. Yeah, I mean, the poor weeping angel can't get much exercise done if anyone's looking at her, can she? Yeah, but that was good. I liked the fact that she was called Angela. I liked Captain Jack as well. I thought he was all right. He was very Captain Jack. I think they did quite well with sort of deprecating humour.
Yeah.
Regards him. Yeah, which punctured his ego a bit. Yeah, I enjoyed that. I thought he was all right. But the thing is, there's just, again, I think there's something weird with the writing, isn't there, again? And I think that's the problem. I mean, early on, you've got that clumsy work on trying to make us care about the driver.
Yes.
We don't even know that he's necessarily dead because he just falls over and he's like, he could just be like stunned, frozen, paralysed, whatever. But for some reason, we've got that bit where his boss says, "How's your mother? Oh, it must be very difficult for you."
Exactly,
and then he's
yeah.
got the photo in the cab, and it's like, it's not really necessary, is it? I mean, presumably, thousands, if not millions of people die in this story. Many people die on screen. And we're not given this whole backstory about their mothers to make them seem like we've got to like...
They do it for Leo the stupid scientist as well. You know when they say, he's on the phone, he says, "Give the kids a kiss from me."
Yes. Yeah.
And it's like, I'll give you something to so you'll sympathise with them for being in danger and dying, because I can't actually write them as characters enough to make you think that, you know, naturally.
No. I think Leo's another good example of the slightly weird writing. You're right with that bit you just said, but also it seems weird because he's incredibly cautious, and yet they have this turnaround where he's like, "Oh, by the way, I've just recklessly cloned one of these aliens and plugged it into the internet for some reason. I just thought I'd see what happens." And then the guy who is reckless, Robertson, he's the one who's all suddenly cautious and like, "Oh, you can't do that. No, that's a terrible idea. Destroy it." And it's like, they just swapped characters. Have they just swapped personalities?
Do you know what? There's a thing that I do at work. Part of my job is to write out tape scripts for actors to read out at recording studios for our exams that get sent out. And sometimes there will be a bit of a switch. So, for example, let's say Robertson and Leo. Someone might be, "Oh no, whoops, I've gotten the wrong way round. Can you change this before we send it to the printers?" Yeah. Maybe that didn't happen this time around.
Yes. Again, that seems like it was almost just so that Chris Chibnall can use that "people don't like experts" line. "This is why people don't like experts."
Yeah.
And it seemed more like he had that idea in mind, and then he tried to, well, this would be a good build-up to that line. You know, because it's topical and satirical.
"By the way" is an expression you can see being scattered throughout Chris Chibnall's scripts, isn't it? "Oh, by the way, I did this. By the way, I recloned a Dalek."
Yeah. And also, like, he's clearly a technical boffin. He's like a computer boffin. He's like an engineer. And then he's also a boffin at biotechnology and cloning.
Yes, exactly.
It's like, what? That's one hell of a skill set, isn't it?
And still finds the time to have kids.
He probably cloned them.
Can I just interject here with two things which you just brought up, Mark, which I've instantly thought of two examples where in Classic Who this same thing happens, right?
Okay.
First of all, when it comes to trying to give secondary or third characters depth, writing in them saying goodbye to loved ones, that's very Hand of Fear.
Yeah, but that works really well in Hand of Fear.
Because it's had 45 years to embed itself in the consciousness of fans. And also, Liz Shaw was also a woman in her early 20s who had multiple degrees in all kinds of things, which is pretty much the same for Leo as well. Which we can't really explain away, can we?
As a lot of people say, things were different in the 70s, weren't they? Yeah, no, that's a fair point. Yeah. Other things that just feel slightly off is like how the TARDIS operates in this story. Like, it kind of either doesn't work properly at the beginning, or it does work and she can get it right into the corridor outside Robertson's office. And then she goes to Osaka and she says, we're going to Osaka fast. And then it goes to 5 minutes of other plot and stuff elsewhere. And then it comes back to the TARDIS and it's just the Doctor and Ryan. And she says, 4 minutes to Osaka. And I just find that really odd. Do you know what I mean? The TARDIS always takes however long the narrative needs the TARDIS to take to get there. It's slightly breaks the... I don't know. It just seemed a bit weird. Like, it's just... I mean, I was talking to Polly about it today, and she said she always presumed that the TARDIS just basically dematerialised and rematerialised somewhere else when it was doing journeys like that.
Well, the other thing about that was that she walks in and says, right, 4 minutes to Osaka. Then she and Ryan sit down on those little sort of steps inside the TARDIS and have a heart-to-heart. They arrive in Osaka, and Jack says to Yaz, he goes, you know, warp, warp. Jack says to Yaz, I've missed that sound. And then out of the TARDIS walk the Doctor, Ryan, and Robertson.
Yeah.
So while they were having a heart-to-heart, he was hanging around in the console room, listening to them.
Yeah, and so was Graham.
Was Graham with them?
Yeah.
Yes, it must have been, wasn't it? Because they do that silly thing where she says, he says, oh, Yaz, and she says, oh, Graham. Which is clunky, if anything is.
That thing as well, where for some reason, in that scene with Ryan and the Doctor, Chris Chibnall has to tell us that Ryan's character has a thing about beanies, because we've never noticed him always wearing a beanie before. So Chris Chibnall has to say it is. It's not really a big point in any other episode. And I think as well, I think the story could have been structured better. I think that scene with the rioting, in fact, all that front bit between Robertson and, what's her name, the Prime Minister?
Patterson.
Patterson. I think a lot of that, it could have been done in flashback, but the rioting didn't really need to be done as such. I think the Dalek reveal would have been better if we'd have had the bit with the Doctor in prison start off with, and then moved to the bit with Yaz in the house, and then Graham comes in and says, look at this, Yaz, and shows her the footage on his phone, and then she's going, oh my god, is that a Dalek? And you know, you just see it through the smoke and stuff, and then the camera pans up and she goes, and that's the spider guy. You know, And then have that, and it's like, well, what do we do? And then you could maybe have a flashback to them talking about Patterson and Robertson. Because I just think that reveal of him getting his phone out and showing like some dodgy footage would have been like, oh my God, look at that. What's going on? And she could have gone, oh, isn't that the Home Secretary or whatever it is, the Minister for Technology? And I just think that would have been more intriguing for me. And I think a lot of the bits where they pause for a chat, like Yaz and Jack and Ryan and the Doctor, could be cut down a hell of a lot as well. Because I think they just break the whole thing up. In fact, I think you could have... I could have easily hacked away about a quarter of an hour of that, I think. And I think it would have been tighter and punchier. And I don't think the plot would have suffered for it. And you could perhaps have had more Dalek stuff if you could have... Because presumably Dalek modelling and the special effects and stuff are all sort of in the bag, you know, yeah. They've got them to use. I'd done more Dalek on Dalek, obviously. The pervert that I am. So yeah, so just kind of quite enjoyable, but lots of bits of it that kept jarring with me all the way through.
Okie doke. Any thoughts, Aidan?
Yeah, I watched it again at lunchtime today, which would be the third time I've seen it.
It's similar to me.
How brave.
And I kind of feel as though Chris Chibnall is now getting tarnished by fandom because of the weakness of the first series. I agree with you. I do find, yeah, there are some editing issues and there are some clunky dialogue. And there's probably too many characters in this as well to make it as punchy as we may have liked. But something that I've been doing this year is rewatching basically all of Doctor Who. Well, about half of Colin Baker's stuff, the half I can bear. And this has always been there. All of the criticisms that we are levelling at Chibnall now are things which have always been in the show. There's always been long scenes where they say, for example, you've had moments like in the TARDIS where on this occasion you've had Ryan and the Doctor stop for 4 minutes and have a chat, which is actually a very nice scene, I thought. I thought it was a very well played and actually fairly well written scene, that bit. You think back to the wedding of River Song and the Doctor and Dorian inside the TARDIS during the TARDIS being in flight as well. The TARDIS will be as fast or as slow in landing as the plot will allow.
Yes, yeah, yeah, I agree. I agree. I don't kind of need it pointing out. I think that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, which is fair enough.
Which one was Dorian?
Blue-headed person in a box.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Which is true. So, in other words, this is the old maybe needs another draft or might need someone to just have a have a little look out of it and just snip around a couple of the rough edges, I think. I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. On the first watch, I really enjoyed it. Second watch, I was a little preoccupied and thought, well, maybe this won't be as good. And actually, watching it again today, I found a lot more in it, which I did enjoy. I thought Jodie was really good. I liked the bust out of prison. I liked the little harkbacks to, as Mark so eloquently put it, the previous costumes that they've had in the show before. I quite liked the Robertson character this time round, and I didn't, well, I say liked. I liked his portrayal. Obviously, he's not made out to be a very likeable person. But I just feel as though the same old tropes of Chibnall's run are the things that are so astonishingly explicit, like the fact that there's too many people in the TARDIS, which means that any character development has to grind to a halt because you have to focus on just one of them. So, for instance, this time round, Yaz obviously had her focus, and then Ryan had his focus in one, maybe two scenes, which meant that Graham was almost surplus to requirements, the whole thing. I also thought, yeah, I mean, like you said, the whole Leo thing about him, all of a sudden he's a genius, and not only cloning, but also... Yeah, but again, that's kind of something which has always happened, and that's something I've picked up on recently, in recent months, from rewatching Who. It's just that they will be as clever as the plot wants them to be. And I liked the resolution of how they got rid of the Daleks, but I know what Mark means when he said about he wanted a big Dalek battle, because I kind of harkened back to Doomsday.
Yeah.
With this, where that supposed Battle of Canary Wharf, and when you think back to it, there was a warehouse scene where there was a few Cybermen shooting at a few Daleks, and then a CGI bit where they all come flying out of the Dalek Portaloo, hovering above Canary Wharf, and then all get sucked into the void. That's kind of it, action-wise, in Doomsday.
Yeah, 100%. It's not the battle that people have been thirsting for all these years, is it?
So I wonder whether they do, and actually I would argue you probably saw more in this than we did in Doomsday.
Yeah.
When it came to a big battle. I really liked both variants of the Daleks. I thought they were good. Oh, that's another one for you, Chibnall. Variants of the Daleks. That's one to come up in recent years. In times to come, I should say. I thought Captain Jack, funnily enough, I was watching this and I thought on first viewing, God, Jack's really well written. It's as though he's always been in the show. It's just like how he was back in the RTD years. And then, of course, it didn't twig that Chibnall was the showrunner on Torchwood. So he knows how to write for Captain Jack. And he knows how to write for that version of Jack and the Doctor Who version of Jack. I thought the banter was really nice. I kind of liked how abrupt Jack's departure was. There's no need for a big teary-eyed hug and, you know, like Sarah Jane at the end of school reunion, because this is a character who does kind of flitter in and out of the Doctor's life.
Yeah, I would say that's another bit of the writing that I found a bit odd when Jack is talking to Yaz and he's saying, "You don't get to choose when you leave." And I was like, you bloody do, Jack. You always do.
Well, the bit that made me laugh was in when he said, "The Doctor showed me things I could never possibly imagine." I thought,
Cardiff?
What you mean? Wales and a space station.
You know, maybe in the 51st century, a city like Cardiff is just like, what?
To be fair, between the Doctor Dances and Boomtown, they did travel around to it, didn't they? They went to that.
Well, they did.
Planet called Woman Weeps and the planet with the frozen surf.
Yes, they did.
I found the Jack's farewell incredibly clunky. I've met Grace. What's she called?
Gwen Cooper.
I've met Eve and
no, it's Gwen. It is Gwen. Eve's the actress. Sorry.
I've met Gwen and she's doing this. I'm going to go and have some fun with her. Bye. Apparently over a phone. Just seems a little crowbarred in to try in the weird editing. Weird editing, I think.
I think the editing was the problem with that. I mean, the actual, like I was saying, you know, Jack feels as though he hops on and off with the Doctor anyway, and always has done. So you don't need a big scene where he's saluting right at the very end, going, Mom, and all this, and you were the Doctor all the time, or something like that, you know. You don't need that from him. Plus, you've already got the fact they're going to write out Graham and Ryan at that point. So you don't need three of them going.
No.
I thought the farewell scene was nice, but I just felt a little bit like... I saw people online saying, oh, they didn't do anything with Graham's cancer. And it was like people actively wanted Graham to leave with terminal cancer, which I found really disturbing. I thought that was really dark and bleak. I thought, no, it was very nice. And actually, that last scene of them back on the hill, I thought was rather lovely too. It didn't need the Grace bit.
Oh, no.
I actually thought it would have been more poignant with her not being there.
Can anyone explain that to me? What happened?
The scene on the hill or seeing Grace?
Seeing Grace? I don't understand, saw her as a sort of... An angel.
A hallucination. She wasn't there.
Yeah, I know, but why did they both have the same... Oh, hold on. Police car going past.
Oh, duck down, Mark.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I said, hold on. I'm just going to hide in the cupboard. So I was just going to say, yes, I thought she seemed more like an angel, but why are they both having the same hallucination at the same time? And it just looked, I thought it just looked faintly ridiculous to me.
Unless it's meant to be an indication of how close they've now grown. You know, he finally calls him granddad.
He did that ages ago.
But what you were saying about, what were you saying just before you talked about brought Grace up? Oh, the cancer thing.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I think the point is, if they hadn't brought it up in the last series, then maybe not. But having brought it up and left it with the Doctor saying, sorry, I can't help you, I don't understand, and that's it. It just sort of leave the cancer meme in the air somewhat. So you think, oh, Graham and Ryan aren't riding off into the sunset to have lots of fun. They're riding off into the sunset and... probably Graham's going to be on chemo for the rest of his life or something.
I don't think it's necessary to be
I don't think it's necessary at all.
I think that could be left unsaid. Can I just say, talking to my friend Nick, the guy with the with the headphones problem on the train, and do you remember when we said about the pilot, the first episode, when Ryan throws his bike and it lands in those woods?
Oh, yeah.
Me and him were both delighted to see that we were on exactly the same hill and we could sit there and we were going, like, where's the woods? And then you look at the picture on the screen and Ryan must be, what, 2 miles from those woods that are in the background? And there's no woods anywhere near them to be seen. Just think, that kid's got one hell of a throw. Why wasn't that made more of in there, in the series? Just say that basketball bit and the bomb throwing. Wow. You know, Ryan could have wiped out the whole cyber fleet with his bomb throwing.
It's almost like he's got a bionic arm.
Yes, it is. A little trigger on his back to lift up an engine.
I will give my score at the end, and it will be a very positive score, but I just feel I'm kind of happy enough now to let some of these Chibnisms go. Because it isn't going to change under him. It's a bit like people used to get really annoyed with Stephen Moffat because he couldn't write women. They were all the same character.
Mm.
You've just kind of got to get over it, I think, and just accept this point. Or Russell T. Davis had with his just terrible, terrible bastardness. No, I'm joking. Yeah. I couldn't think of an RCD one right now. But that's it, making it very soapy. You've just got to accept it for what it is at the moment, I think, really.
Yeah, I do have to say it has become a bit like a scab that keeps itching and I can't stop picking at it.
Oh, don't.
Right, okay, go on, Doc. You take the wheel.
Well, I envy you both. For me, it's one of those stories where a second viewing isn't recommended. First viewing, it's a half-decent story, and I did get carried along sufficiently by the story to enjoy it. But on second viewing, you start noticing the plotting and scripting flaws. Now, my second watch, I found myself checking how long that was left before the end. Oh, Lord, not another hour to go, is there? There were individual scenes which I found entertaining, but the story I thought was pretty... meh. Perhaps it's one of its main selling points was it wasn't as bad as The Timeless Children. The prison thing, I've never liked it when any of them. It was mainly Moffat that used to do it in Chibnall. They suddenly say, oh, I've been doing this for 200 years. I've been on Trenzalore for 200 years. I've been, whatever that planet was called he was defending.
Christmas.
Yeah. I've been in prison 19 years. But it doesn't
no,
feel
she'd
like
been in
it.
Prison longer than that because it took Jack 19 years
to break into
the prison. But she'd been in there for a few decades, which is the other thing that I found a bit odd when she turns up and she's I've been in space prison and everyone's really pissed off with her. And it's like haven't even asked her how long for or anything like that. They're just like, and it's like, she's been in prison for like possibly 50 years.
They tend to think, I can put in 200 years has just elapsed. And that's it. But at no point feels, oh, there's 200 years has elapsed. Just been told it. A friend of the podcast, Simon Brett, was saying recently, if it wasn't for all those chalk marks on the wall of her cell, you would have no idea that she'd been in prison that long.
No.
She just seems mildly bored with it all. And again, why is she apologising to the fam for being in prison? I think the fact that Yaz reacts to the doctor having been away for 10 months by resenting her says everything. To Jadoon, materialising the TARDIS, grabbed the doctor and spirits her away. And their reaction is to resent her for being away for so long. I mean, they must have known that she was being taken into trouble.
I had a dog like that. He was a lovely dog called Speakin. And I had a dog called Speakin. It's Swedish for nail. He was a rescue dog. Because he was a small, grey, scruffy dog. And the person who found him was Swedish. So he's called Speakin. And I went to Australia for 3 weeks with my girlfriend. And left someone else to look after the dog. When we came back, the dog was incredibly pleased to see us and see his tail wagging, but it was sort of like part of him was wanted to run up and like make a huge fuss over us, and the other half of him, he was sort of going, but I'm really cross with you for leaving me, and I feel upset that you've left me. He was trying to sort of like turn away from us, and he didn't know what to do, bless him. That's what Yaz reminded me of, sorry.
The doctor's just spent all these years, well, at least 10 months as far as she's concerned, 79 billion miles away in a prison, and we're asked to believe that Yaz has spent those 10 months staring at a wall of post-it notes, trying to work out where the doctor is. It might probably make sense if the doctor had been planning her disappearance for ages, and then would have left perhaps clues all around the TARDIS, but she didn't know she was being spirited away. No one else did. What exactly is she looking at on that wall of post-it notes?
Yeah, no idea.
The how did they know where it stopped for tea thing was silly. I didn't really notice it until I heard someone else bring it up. I thought it was more silly that the woman who filled his cup at the stall, as she was the one who was planning to drive away the lorry, that all rather presupposes that he would have taken a sip of it before he got back into the lorry and drove away.
Yeah, a scalding hot tea.
Yeah. And just full, really, again, of the... I know, Hayden, you've been trying to excuse the Chibnallisms, but for me, this clunky expositional dialogue, having your political ambitions ruined by that little toxic waste scandal seems to have been a blessing in disguise.
I wasn't excusing them. I was just saying we're stuck with them.
Yeah.
Like we would be with anything from anyone's era. Like I said, with Moffat not being able to write women. Graham Williams not having a budget.
Doctor explaining to Leo what he's done wrong. What have you done, Leo? You've cloned the smallest trace of organic material, not understanding that Dalek consciousness can live within the tiniest fragment of their DNA. Not understanding? Who would say that? As a subordinate clause.
But Doc, you are not understanding that this is just what we have to live with. We.
Unlikely dialogue. They turn up in Otosika, and Yaz and Graham run to each other and fold each other in each other's arms. Say, Yaz! Graham! Leo the moron, that scientist, I hooked it into the intraneural network and it understood our sisters immediately. You hook it in. Just how stupid is he? Throw it in the furnace. It's so stupid that he puts it on the edge of the furnace, then opens the box right underneath his face. The big thing I can't understand here is. Why exactly is this Dalek casing going to be useful as a riot control device? The very most water you could store inside to make it a water cannon would be if it was completely filled with water. There's not going to be room for that. So whereas it can't really work as a water cannon for like more than a few seconds, effectively it's just a remote-controlled vehicle for producing a high-pitched whine and spraying CS gas. Surely they could have come up with something more practical than that. Why do they think this Dalek thing that we found wrecked is going to be perfect for that?
It's a bit like Boris Johnson's water cannon, though, isn't it? So it's quite true to life.
Instead of just coming up with some kind of mobile device themselves, you've got a government minister has entered into a conspiracy with a private company, in the course of which they killed the guy driving the lorry. That's going out on a lot of limbs. For what? I mean, maybe if the minister was Priti Patel, it'd be understandable, because Boris Johnson would just put out a WhatsApp message saying, Priti Patel has just caused a Dalek invasion. It's time to form a square around the Pritster. But really, the only reason that either Robertson or Patterson would have for choosing a Dalek casing for this would be to enable an accidental Dalek takeover of the Earth plot. And just seems silly to me. Chris Noth is good as Robertson. I think it was one of the best acting performances in the episode. I do notice that it's interesting that the Dalek creature itself has recently become much scarier than the actual Dalek machines. It's that thing of landing on someone's backs, a bit like Planet of the Spiders.
Yeah.
They looked a bit like the Metabilis 3 spiders, didn't they? The way they were stiffly moving in those big jars.
Another reason why it might not be useful to use Daleks for these new security drones is that when you present them on TV in front of 10 Downing Street, yes, it does happen, but it's quite a risk just to expect everyone to forget that in Stolen Earth Journey's End, the Daleks are flying all over the Earth.
Oh, that's true, yes. People. I did think that, yeah.
Having said that, I did like the summoning of the Dalek SAS force. That was quite a nice, unexpected thing. Rather than just, you know, clicking your fingers, coming up with an idea for killing them all. But although, quite why you would summon the Daleks and then hide from them by parking the TARDIS on top of that bridge is slightly unusual. The solution of the second TARDIS came as a complete surprise, but... The Doctor's effectively killing a TARDIS there, isn't he?
Yeah.
Isn't she? There must be only three of them left in the universe. She's killing the Daleks and the TARDIS, and she stops to gloat at them. What she says to the Daleks, I programmed it to fold in on itself and blah, 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 blah.
I hadn't thought about it being a killing of the TARDIS, but it really is, isn't it?
It's supposed to be sentient, yeah.
Yeah. God. What a rotter.
And that's mainly it, really, as far as I'm concerned. It was okay, but it wasn't anything special for me. I am looking forward to seeing John Bishop, actually.
Yes.
Am I glad that we're not getting the hoped-for all-female TARDIS crew of Yaz and the Doctor.
I do think that could be a bit beige.
Yeah, I do get the impression that people have been expressing hope for this on social media. Mm. Just give the impression that they've been typing this with only one hand. I strongly suspect, you know what you're talking about, Mark, about Dalek on Dalek action?
Yeah.
I strongly suspect a lot of it is nothing to do with, oh, there's a wonderful acting opportunities for Mandip Gill, and they've been denied to her by bringing someone else into the TARDIS. So much as opportunities for female-on-female interaction.
Mm,
which, for fans of anything on social media, is pretty much shorthand for lesbian fantasies. It's two women together. It simply must be an opportunity for girl-on-girl action, mustn't it? That's what people are like, isn't it? It never happens when there's two men.
Oh, well, I don't know about that.
Well, maybe.
I must be following different people on social media too.
I think it would probably be much more limited. And the main reason, I'm not particularly, well, apart from the fact that I think it's silly that they have the Doctor falling in love with their companions like that, but I've no particular objections to that happening. But can you imagine what it would be like if it was written by Doctor Who writers? Two women in a relationship. Well, I've mentioned this before a few years ago. We simply must write them. They're lesbians, or we're in a lesbian relationship. So we simply must write them as resenting men. Which that sort of writer seems to imagine is a compliment towards women. But in fact,
resenting men, hallelujah.
It's an extraordinarily chauvinistic, male-centric stereotype of lesbians. It's not women who gravitate towards other women because there's anything of intrinsic value in women. It's not an act of embracing women. It's just an act of rejecting men. Just seems slightly bizarre.
Do you reckon some of these people actually, when they listen to the song It's Raining Men, instead of the hallelujah part, it's just replaced with gunfire?
And in the same way that every announced change of the Doctor has been the cue for social media to be dominated by questions, oh, is it going to be a woman this time?
Hmm.
Just imagine how a season with the Doctor and Yaz alone in the TARDIS would be. Every week running up to a new episode, social media will be full of, oh, is this going to be the one where the Doctor and Yaz get it on? And so I'm actually quite looking forward to John Bishop here. I've not seen him acting, although he has actually acted with, he's worked with Ken Loach, I think, so he's not exactly...
Oh, really?
Unused to it. I've not seen him as a comedian. I've seen his show where he interviews people.
I don't much like him as a comedian.
But he seems...
Personally, but...
He seems fairly laid back.
Yeah, comedians always make for really good actors as well.
Oh, and to be honest, I was a bit, what, when they presented John Bishop. Then I thought to myself, well, to be fair, that's what I thought when they announced Billy Piper. That's what I thought when they announced
Catherine Tate.
You know, so I'm willing to hold fire and wait and see what happens. And it's, you know, it's kind of what I was thinking about Bradley Walsh as well. It's like,
What's his character going to be called, Dan?
Yeah.
No, Doc, you got it wrong. It's Azdan.
and I think it's unlikely that they're going to write him as either angsty or sulky. I think it'll be someone who's fairly laid back. That will nicely suit the Doctor's giddiness and Yaz's intensity. I mean, with any luck, they won't ask him to exaggerate his Scouse accent, so he sounds like he quit school at 14. And actually, one example of that Scouse accent, one advantage of that Scouse accent is that it doesn't rely on glottal stops. So whereas the Doctor in prison would say, hello, camera 38. He'd probably, hello, camera 38. That's such a terrible Scouse accent, but you know what I mean. That would be one load off my mind. Yesterday on Twitter, as a joke, I can't remember what triggered it was, I posted an imaginary press release from John Bishop. You know my habit of when a new companion arrives or someone's new is casted, a thing of getting... Did they actually write this press release themselves? Yeah. Or was it just done by a robot in the BBC press department? And my imaginary skit on this was John Bishop saying, I am delighted to be joining the Doctor Who family and having exciting adventures through time and space in the TARDIS. And then today I came across his actual press release. If I could tell my younger self that one day I would be asked to step on board the TARDIS, I would never have believed it. It's an absolute dream come true to be joining Doctor Who, and I couldn't wish for better company than Jodie and Mandip. Something tells me he didn't write that himself.
No.
So I'm quite looking forward to him. Do we know when it's likely to be starting?
No idea.
I think they're very flexible, aren't they, with the start time at the moment.
Yeah.
Because John Bishop around Christmas time tested positive for COVID as well.
Right.
And I know he's been back on set recently because I've seen it on Twitter, but I think they had to shut down for a little bit. They would have done anyway.
Mm. Yeah, that'd be interesting next season, seeing John Bishop. But also, I think there's a couple of other things that we've got to look forward to, which appeared in this Revolution Daleks. And that's probably the reappearance of Robertson.
Yes, it's got to be, hasn't it? Yeah.
Because I can't believe it's going to be left like that. I can't believe he's got away with it twice. There's got to be either, he gets his comeuppance, or he'll get some sort of redemption arc.
Yeah.
Or get blasted to bits, Harriet Jones style, by Daleks or something, doing something out of character and heroic. And also the mention of Depository 23, or was it? I just thought we could call this episode Suppository 23. Because Depository 23 was mentioned, and I think that'll come back.
I knew where you were there. I'd seen the roadmap that Mark was on as soon as he said that.
I imagine it wouldn't be that hard to find Depository 23 now, would it? Because you imagine it's supposed to be a top secret, but at least we know now that it's somewhere where, on a direct line between it and GCHQ, there's only one coffee stall on the motorway. Marks out of 10? I would give it a 6.
I'll give it a 7.
I'm going to give it an 8.
Oh, well, here we are.
Next podcast, Faith and Sisters, we're expecting to be our Matt Smith's era retrospective. I jogged at the memories of a few of you on Twitter in New Year, and we've had between 60 and 70 people voting so far. So if you haven't voted yet, please do so on any of our platforms. Probably best Twitter, but anything you like. You can find all of them, links to all of them, on our podcast blog at diddlydumpodcast.wordpress.com. Shall we bring things to a close? Oh, hang on. On our Hooseum video link, there's someone who's been helping Mark Cockrum to his feet and carried him over to one of our antique fainting couches. Is that Uncle Terence giving Mark mouth to mouth? Uncle Terence, are you there?
Quick, turn the volume up.
What's he saying?
Shall we swap numbers now, or shall we swap numbers later?
Uncle Terence, leave Mark alone. Can you just make sure you turn up the oxygen feed into the atrium, please? Thank you. Have you had a good Christmas and New Year, Uncle Terence?
Well, no, actually, my dear Doc Hume, I was stuck in storage the whole...
Sure you've put the oxygen on?
Sounds like helium to us, Uncle Terence.
Well...
That's better.
Oh, good. Good. Yes, anyway, is there anything you want? I was rather busy. I was in the middle of something.
Have you had a good Christmas and New Year?
Yes, I managed to pull a quacker.
Uncle Terence, if Mark manages to recover, let's let him out of the building, will you? Otherwise, have you got any advice on where we can dump his body?
I've got a few places, yes, which come to mind, but the best one is the Wiver. Don't dump bodies into the Wiver.
Uncle Terence, we have enemy ships in Sector 27.
It's a trap.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You have been listening to the Diddly Dumb Podcast. Find us on our blog at diddlydumbpodcast.wordpress.com, on iTunes, Facebook, Audioboo, and Stitcher.com at diddlydumb, on Twitter at diddly_dumb, or email us at diddlydumbpodcast@yahoo.co.uk.
Diddly Dumb, the empty space that circles time.